Welcome to the Killer Innovations Podcast for Saturday, February 11th, 2006. Coming to you from Washington, D.C., this is show number 45. We're doing a little bit of a different intro. We're squeezing the podcast in just before I leave for Spain. So we're trying to get this in, get it up and posted, and then I'll be hopping on an airplane to Barcelona, Spain for the 3GSM conference. Before we get started, please keep in mind that the information and opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone, and do not necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers. Please keep the emails coming. There's been a lot of chatter on the emails. Also, keep posting your votes and your comments on Podcast Alley, over at Apple iTunes, over at podcasts.yahoo, or any of the other sites that you frequent. I do read those regularly, and do appreciate all the feedback and the comments. Well, last week's show really hit a chord. It generated the most email, with the most common question being, how do I find a mentor? So I'm going to address that as part of segment two for today's show. And boy, was I kind of surprised by the volume of emails that last week's show generated. So appreciate all that. We're going to address that question again in today's show as part of segment number two. So let's go ahead and get started. Segment one. This week's segment one is on the concept of innovation in design. Recently, I found myself in a meeting sitting across the desk from Harmut Esslinger. Now, Harmut is the CEO for Frog Design. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with Frog, Harmut, with two other partners, founded Frog back in 1969. He really got put on the map with the design of a TV for a small, a large manufacturer. That manufacturer was acquired by Sony, and that TV went on to become the Sony Trinitron, which basically was a groundbreaking design for what was traditionally viewed as kind of a standard commodity product of a TV. Since then, Frog has gone on to design such, you know, groundbreaking products as the Apple Macintosh in 1982, went on and Harmut designed the Cube for Next, which was Steve Jobs' next company after he left Apple. In 1998, Frog Design went on to design the Disney cruise ship. In 2001, Frog went on to design the user interface design and all of the graphics for Windows XP. And there's been hundreds and hundreds of products that Frog has worked with, companies from Motorola, Microsoft, Apple, Disney, you name it. Most every one of the major big brand companies have partnered with Frog in some area of design. Well, during the conversation, Harmut was pointing out kind of some of the design philosophy for Frog and how it looks at innovation. So basically, Harmut broke it down into three basic areas of innovation that Frog focuses in on and where they think their customers should be focusing. The first one is what he would call physical innovation. This is the actual innovation around what we would traditionally refer to as the industrial design. So in this case, it's really focusing on the ROI and what he calls the brand equity through timely product releases, meaning how do you design and deliver the product so that when it comes to the market, it really does enhance the brand equity and is attractive enough to where customers are buying their product and you get an ROI that's appropriate for the design effort that you put into it. The second area is what he refers to as digital innovation. Now, in the case of digital innovation, what he's focusing on here is really about the user interface, the whole user experience. You know, how do you use the software? How do you interact with the device itself? How do you take the device out of the box? And how do you have that really out-of-box experience? So in his case, really are focusing on this whole digital innovation. And then the third area is what he refers to as the emotional innovation. And this is focused on things like strategic branding. And really what Harmut believes and his team is focused on is around this emotional innovation is around the fact and the belief that strategic branding leads to increased customer loyalty. I mean, if you think back to 1982 when Frog Design did the work around the original Macintosh, that ignited a passion about the product. It was like nothing else that existed. It really created a loyalty around the customers that is still living on today. Now, albeit Apple has roughly 5% of the PC market, its customer base is extremely loyal. Every new product that comes out, every new release that comes out, that customer base is there. And I think the design language and the work that was really done on the Macintosh back in 82, think about it. At 1982, and really think about the design began in 82, the Macintosh was released in 1984. At that time, Apple's total revenues was about $700 million, total. Within 2 years after the release of the Macintosh, that revenue went to $4 billion. So you're talking about an absolute explosive growth. Now, it wasn't all really about the design of the device itself. There was obviously the work that was done in the Macintosh software, the ease of use, the GUI interface, all the things that make the Macintosh a highly successful product. But you can't argue that Frog Design didn't contribute to that kind of explosive growth. Hartmut's gone on to describe really what he views as what customers are expecting today. What is it that today the customers out there, you know, customers of Frog, and then ultimately the end customers of the products, what is it that the customers are looking for today? First is what he refers to as greater relevance. And what he means by greater relevance is really around this whole issue of not making the product just so it's nice to look at, but that it is relevant to the task at hand, that it is appropriate in its use. Second is better quality. It's been proven that customers are willing to pay a premium for a product in order to get a higher quality. Third is better integration of the complex offerings. If it's too complex for the user, they've got to do multiple steps or put together multiple components, or they have to bring multiple components together in order to complete a task, that's too hard. So the focus that Hartmut believes is needed, particularly in the high-tech industry, is better integration of complex offerings. Next is more personalization and customization. You know, buying the same old thing that everybody else gets without the ability to personalize it is long gone. I mean, one perfect example, particularly here in the U.S., is now you can go into Target, which is a discount retailer, and you can find designers, big-name designers who have very, very high-end products, designing products for the retail discount market, such that you as a consumer can go in at reasonable prices, but get something that's a little bit different, not quite as uniform, and quite as standard as what you would traditionally think of when you go into a discount retailer. And that also applies even into the high tech. I mean, for instance, in the case of iPods, the iPod itself obviously is very trendy. What has been kind of a hidden secret or one of the big surprises in the iPod market is the ability to print and apply what are called tattoos to the outside of your iPod. So you can go down to your local retailer, you buy these sheets of paper that you can stick into your printer, you design whatever you want as the graphic, you print it, you peel it off, and you wrap it around your iPod. So albeit you have an iPod, you can clearly personalize that iPod so that it really talks to your interests, your design language, your own brand. Next, Hartmut talks about faster product development cycles. You know, we've talked in the past in this podcast about innovation acceleration. You know, the fact that the cycle between products, the cycle between releases, is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. The consumers are to the point today where they're not willing to wait more than 9 to 12 months for the next hot product, the next version of whatever it is. You know, again, Apple has done an excellent job on the iPod to where they're kind of on this 6 to 9 month cycle where they're releasing either new versions of their iPods, new versions of the software, but they're constantly innovating, constantly giving the next great thing for the customer and to keep that cycle up. And then lastly, Hartmuth believes where a lot of companies fall flat is having a fully integrated brand, physical product, and digital presence. So it isn't just about, you know, you design the product and you don't think about its impact on the brand. You don't design your website and not think about the physical product. So the key here is how do you create a fully integrated brand, physical product, and digital presence. So again, just in summary, again, we're talking with regards to Frog Design and kind of the philosophy that Hartmuth Esslinger shared in this conversation. One is the fact on the areas of innovation that Frog Design focuses in on is physical innovation, digital innovation, and emotional innovation. And these are kind of unique. I hadn't thought about these specifically, and they have not appeared in this podcast as kind of categorization. So it's kind of an interesting view from Frog Design on physical, digital, and emotional innovations. And again, what does he believe customers are expecting? One, greater relevance. Two, better quality. Three, better integration of complex offerings. Four, more personalization and customization. Five, faster product development cycles. And lastly, fully integrated brands, physical products, and digital presence. And needless to say, you know, being in the same room with Hartmuth was quite overwhelming. He is a very dynamic individual. He's been a real thought leader in the industry. He's had huge impact, particularly in the high-tech industry, but overall as part of one of the leading thinkers of the design world and the use of innovation in the design world, he definitely is one to keep track of. Moving on to segment number two, finding a mentor. Now, needless to say, this was the big question that I got via emails from last week's show. Everybody was interested in not only the steps that you have to go through to really take your idea and execute it from a standpoint of a startup innovation, but the real question was, is how do I go find the mentor? And I emphasized in last week's show, and I've emphasized in previous podcasts, how important mentors can be for you. Now, I've shared in the past about my early mentors, one in particular, a guy by the name of Bob Davis. Bob is one of the early big thinkers in the software industry and licensed software in the 70s and early 80s. He was one of the original management teams at Colonet Software, which eventually became Computer Associates. You know, Bob was the one who hired me straight out of college and basically took the snot-nosed kid who thought he knew everything and whipped me into shape, but really also helped me think about the role of technology, the role of innovation, and how to think differently from the standpoint of having impact. Now, in recent times, I've kept up the whole concept of mentoring and have not stayed with the same mentor over my entire career, but have actually moved my mentors along as my career has changed and as I have focused on new areas or areas that I need to fill out in my own skill set. My most recent mentor, or the person who I really think of as my mentor today, is a gentleman by the name of Alex Mandel. Now, Alex is the former president and COO of AT&T, and most recently, Alex was my boss at the company that I joined, the company just previous to the one that I'm at now. Alex has been quite successful in his career. He was originally the CFO at AT&T and then went on to become the president and COO. And then he left to start a new company, and that's where I joined up with him. But even following, I've been away from that company going on 6 years. And Alex and I get together on a quite regular basis, and clearly I view him as my current mentor. So even in a long past, when you've achieved success in your career, don't give up the idea of constantly making sure that you've got yourself surrounded by mentors who can really help keep you on track, keep your feet grounded, and keep growing from the standpoint of your own expertise. So, but it's important to know what a mentor is and what a mentor is not. So first of all, let's talk about what a mentor is not. It is not passive. This is not just, you know, get together and play nice, you know, patty cake and have the casual conversation. So if, you know, if you're really into a mentoring relationship, it is not passive. It is not infrequent. This isn't a once a year Christmas party get together. And it's also not, you know, you can't call the person a reference when the only time you talk with them is when you need a reference for the next job. You know, that is not a mentor. What is a mentor is active. It's almost apprentice-like. You know, you're sitting at someone's feet, you're learning from their background, their skills, their expertise, and that is, you know, clearly, you know, how you learn. It is not, you know, sitting back and letting them spoon feed you. It is you have to be active in the engagement. You have to be active in the conversation. You have to have also someone from a standpoint of being active is that they also have to be honest. They have to be willing to be in your face. They have to be willing to point out where you're flat out wrong, whether that be your attitude, the decision processes that you're using, pointing out holes in your skill set, holes in your educational background, holes in whatever. You want somebody who is going to be, you know, brutally honest. This is not, you know, having the mentor is not, you know, the purpose is not for you to have an ego boost of someone sitting there being your cheerleader. Now, obviously, you want somebody who's going to be supportive. They're going to be there for you. They're going to help you be successful. But they're also going to be honest about what it is you need to do to be successful. And having a mentor relationship means that the conversation and the action is frequent and it's committed. If you're constantly scheduling times to spend together and it constantly gets rebooked or pushed off, not followed through, then it's not a mentoring relationship. Both parties need to be committed. So the question is how do you find it? So we've talked about what a mentor is, what a mentor is not. So how do you find a mentor? Well, first off, you need to define your own criteria. In this case, I'm going to share with you what I think my criteria is. Your criteria may be something completely different, and it's worth the time for you to think about, you know, what is the criteria that you want to apply when you look at individuals who you may ask to get engaged with on a mentoring relationship. So the criteria that I'm using is one, someone I trust. You're going to share things with this individual that you clearly are not going to want spread around, passed around, known in the industry, because you're going to be admitting your own fallacies, your own fears, your own holes in your skill sets. So you need somebody that you can trust implicitly. Two is you need someone you respect. You know, somebody that's at the same level of you, that's really not a mentoring relationship. That's more of a partnering kind of a relationship. You need somebody who's had success in their career, success in a certain part of their life that you respect and that you think would be a good match for what it is you're trying to achieve. So you need to have someone you respect. Again, you need to have someone whose career you yearn for. You need to have the dreams. You need to have a dream of where you're going. And you need to find somebody whose career is along the path that kind of helps you connect the dots for you to achieve your dream. Now, let me kind of do a little bit of a sidestep here. Many people that I've had conversations with over the years when they start talking about mentoring and who they respect and who they would like to be mentored by tends to focus on money. You know, so-and-so, boy, they've got a great career. They're pulling down X millions a year or they're famous because they're on the front page of, you know, magazines, whatever the case might be. In my case, I have never chosen a mentor based on their career presence or by money. And again, I'm going to give you my criteria. This is kind of the rules of the game that I use when I'm thinking about my prioritizations. So again, this just applies to me. And it's what I call the five F's. First one is faith. Whatever religion you believe in, faith, I think, should be number one. Family is number two. Friends is number three. Fitness, you have to have good health, number four. Finance is number five. And really what happens is if you focus on the top four, five naturally happens in your career. You tend to get really screwed up if you put finance number one. So again, I've never chosen a mentor over my years of my career based on finance. And then lastly, for me, from a criteria is looking for someone whose knowledge or expertise that fills a gap. You know, I have a dream, I have an objective, I have a long-term goal that I want to achieve, and I'm constantly finding mentors who I can work with that helps fill my gaps, helps gives me the education, shares with me their experiences so that I can avoid the potholes, but that their skill and expertise fills a gap that I have that's ultimately going to allow me to achieve my long-term vision. So once you've defined your criteria, now you have to go through the step of actually selecting and engaging with somebody on a mentoring relationship. So first off, take a look against your criteria and look at your formal and informal network. Now, you're not confined by the people that you know intimately. Now, albeit that is much easier to find a mentor, you're not constrained by just the people who you have a close relationship with, because you may have an aspiration that requires that you engage with somebody that's completely outside of your social personal network. So don't be shy about the fact of limiting your list of people who you would like to be mentored by whoever it is that you have a very close, direct personal relationship with. Now, some people on that list could be fairly famous people. You know, this is an opportunity for you to put everything on the list that everyone on your list who you think fits your criteria, and ultimately then what is your objective, it matches up against your long-term vision. Once you've identified them, then you need to rank them against the criteria. If you know the person, it's fairly easy to rank. If you don't know them, you're going to have to get some background information. Next is, once you've identified who are the likely people that you would like to be mentored by who fit your need, then you've got to research them. You know, you got to understand what, you know, their background, how they get to where they are, and you also have to understand what it is they can give to you, but more importantly, why would they be interested in mentoring you? You know, is it somebody that has a mentoring kind of, mentality about what they do day in and day out? Is it someone, for instance, who donates their time to charity, to the Boys and Girls Clubs, to Boy Scouts, to charity organizations, not just their money, but also their time? You know, what would give you the indication that this person is a giving person to the point of kind of a pay it forward mentality of willing to donate their time and their expertise to help other people be successful? Next is, you need to get the first meeting. And this has to be a face-to-face. This isn't a phone conversation. This isn't something you can do long distance. You need to get this face-to-face. And in this first meeting, here are some critical things you have to cover. One is, share your background. What's your career? What have you done over your career? Where are you today? Two, share your dreams. From where you're at today, what is it your objective? What is your dream to be achieved? Three, and the most important thing, and this is the thing that just, you know, I have the hardest time when I'm in conversations, particularly I do a lot of work with college students, and that is that they tend to be either two extremes, one fairly quiet or one very passionate. And the ones that I get excited to work with are ones that can share their passion. You can't just, if it's really your dream, it can't be a dream that you're just going to casually think about. It's got to be something that you're passionate about, that you've got energy for, things that you really want to achieve in your life. You got to share the passion. At the end of the meeting, you need to ask for their advice. Based on your background, based on your dreams, based on your passions, what would be their advice? What would be their advice on how best for you to achieve the dream? What is it that you need to do to be successful in the dream? Assuming that you're talking to somebody who is along that path or somebody who's actually achieved that dream and you would like to achieve the same level of success that they did. So you want to ask for their advice. Here's another key thing. Do not ask for them to go into a mentor relationship in the first meeting. That's fairly presumptuous. If you don't know this person very well, you need to build a little bit of a relationship before you think about establishing, you know, that kind of a mentoring activity. So, assuming that you've got through the first meeting successfully, now what do? You set up another meeting. Let some time pass, go off, reflect on what you heard in the first meeting, and then set up a second meeting. And now here's the key things for the second meeting. One, show that you listened. Feedback what advice they gave you. Show that you've applied their advice. If their advice was for you to do some research, think about going back to school, whatever the case might be, show that you're applying, that you have applied it, or you're working towards applying their advice. Ask for their advice again. Ask for refinement. Ask for clarification on their advice from the first meeting. And at the end of that meeting, then you can ask them for a mentoring relationship. And what you're basically asking for them in that mentoring relationship is that they would commit to meet with you on a regular basis, that they would give you advice, that they would be openly and honest, that you would take that advice and apply it. And nobody wants to be in a mentoring relationship or an apprentice kind of a relationship when you're giving advice and the person just blows you off and doesn't take that advice to heart. Because then, you know, really what's the role, you know, rather than just taking interesting meetings. If you do get established into a mentoring relationship, here's some other ground rules. And these ground rules cannot be violated. One, give credit. Tell people that, you know, the work that you're doing and when you get success in your career, it isn't always about you. It's about the people that help you get there. You know, in my case, it's Bob Davis, it's Alex Mandel, it's others who have mentored me along the way. John Sidgemore was a mentor of mine. John was the early CEO at UUNET. You know, I've been fortunate to have great men who I've been able to count as mentors and who've significantly helped me along my career to be successful. Give credit to those that have helped you along the way. And two, and this is the most important rule, don't violate the trust. If you're given access, particularly to high-profile individuals, don't violate the trust. Don't abuse the access. So if you've got a mentoring relationship with somebody that is not the person or the relationship that you should violate when you and go try to sell them, the relationship is off limits. If you get into a mentoring relationship that is not somebody or that company that you should be considering to have any kind of a customer-vendor relationship with, because that clearly causes a huge amount of confusion and conflicts of interest. Don't abuse the access. Don't bring your friends in. Don't use your connection to ask your mentor to take meetings with friends of yours. This is a one-on-one relationship. Do not abuse the access. Secondly, don't name drop. It is one of the biggest challenges, and I know actually I get a lot of criticism from listeners of the podcast thinking that I'm name-dropping based on the people that I know or the people that I've had meetings with or whatever, and I sure hope you don't take it that way because my intention is not to name-drop, and actually I hate when people just get into the process of just name-dropping. The purpose of giving you names is just to give you examples. But if you have a mentoring relationship, you're not out there shouting from the treetops, oh, I've got access to so-and-so, and I can get so-and-so on the phone at any time. So-and-so responds to my emails right away. You know, it is not something to boast about. It is something to treasure. If someone's willing to give you their time and be your mentor, that is something for you to value. And it's a gift that you should value and you should protect and not abuse, okay? So hopefully that description of, you know, the background of what a mentor is, what it's not, the criteria, particularly the criteria that I use, you need to come up with your own criteria, and then what's the process of ranking them, researching them, get the first meeting, reflect on what you heard, do the second meeting, then ask for a mentoring relationship, and then don't forget the rules. Give credit. And don't violate the trust. Moving on to segment 3, the killer question of the week. Now, the killer question for this week is similar to a killer question from a previous podcast. And that question was focusing on looking at other industries that where you could find ideas that could apply to yours. Now, this is just a slight variation, not confined to industries, but really to look widely for other idea sources coming from things that you normally would not consider. So, this week's killer question is, what ideas can you adapt from other worlds or fields? So again, what ideas can you adapt from other worlds or fields? Now, what do I mean by worlds or fields? Well, basically, this could range everything from things like the North Pole, bottom of the ocean, or other fields of interest, such as science, religion, art, economics, history, physics, plumbing, music, the circus, the army, Hollywood. Think of something that is totally outside of your industry, totally outside potentially even your areas of interest, and go learn about that field of interest. Look at their problems. Look at their solutions. Look how their business operates. Look how the value chain is created in a certain area. Look how, we talked in previous podcast about biomimicry. How do you look at biology and how biology has adapted and solved problems, and can you apply them to your particular industry? So again, this week's killer question is, what ideas can you adapt from other worlds or fields? With that, thanks for listening. Please send me your audio comments. I'm going to play them for show number 50. We're at show 45 today. We're coming up on the one-year anniversary of the podcast, coming up here at the end of March. So I'm targeting to try to get show 50 around the same time as the one-year anniversary. That's kind of amazing. 50 podcasts in 12 months. But I really, really want your audio feedback. So you can either email it to me, and you can email it to me in a variety of different formats. Just get it to me, and I'll figure out how to convert it. So email it to podcast@killerinnovations.com. Or rather than you spending all the time generating it that way, you can just call the voicemail feedback line at +1-703-636-4460. Again, +1-703-636-4460. And it can be as short or as long as you want. Try to keep it under 3 minutes or so. But I've got some listeners that have just called up and left a quick 15 or 30 seconds. What I'm really looking to hear from you is your thoughts on the podcast, your thoughts on innovation, your thoughts on innovation in your business, industry, or your personal life. Whatever it is you want to say, get those to me, and I'm really looking to string those together and allow you to hear from the listeners of this podcast their thoughts about the show and their thoughts about innovation. Please remember to vote. It's the easiest way for you to say thanks for the producers of your favorite podcast, that you truly appreciate the work and effort they put into it. And I don't know, I have some podcasts that I listen to that are daily podcasts, and phew, given the amount of work it goes into just doing a weekly, I couldn't imagine doing a daily podcast. So my hat goes off to those out there that really put out some of that great content. This week, get creative, ask yourself one killer question, and generate a minimum of 5 great ideas. And then go out and execute. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.